Mohinder Dhillon has been a very important friend of the music show over the years because he's brought us so many of the great Indian musicians, El Subramaniam, the violinist, Hariprasad Charazia, Sultan Khan, Yushrinivas, the santor player Shiv Kumar Sharma, and many, many others. He really has made Indian music an important feature on the music show and an important feature in the concert calendar of Australia as well. He won recently the Sydney Meyer Performing Art Joint Facilitators Prize winner. He was the Joint Facilitators Prize winner and won $10,000 from the Sydney Meyer Performing Arts Fund. But he also gave, in a bequest, $400,000 to the Womadelaide Adelaide Foundation to continue his work after his death, bringing Indian music to Australia. And we thought it was time that we had a conversation with Mohinder Dhillon. So I sat down with him in a hotel room in Adelaide the other week during Womadelaide Adelaide and recorded this conversation. And we began by talking about vocal music because Sudha Raghunathan and Manjari Kelkar are two of the artists that he has brought to Australia. And they had been our guests on the previous year's Womadelaide Adelaide show. Let's listen to them before we listen to the interview with Mohinder.
Kamala, Sati Mukha Kamala, Kamala Hita. Mahinder Dhillon, welcome to the Music Show. Maybe we could begin with your beginnings. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the Punjab, which is now the part that has gone to Pakistan. And I spent my early years in an Indian village, then studied at the university. And then my first job was an administrative job. I sat a competition and won that job. And my main job was some magisterial functions and collection of land revenue for the government and maintenance of land records. But after 2 years, I didn't want to stay there because it was a very corrupt part of the administration. And I was young and I wanted to do the right thing and I thought I'll become like them. And I quit and then I came to Delhi and finished my MA and got a job there and taught there at one of the university colleges for about 16 years until I met my wife Margaret, late wife, and came here to marry her. And after 2 years here, I kept grumbling that there were no concerts of Indian music here, and she was a trained pianist. And she said to me to sort of shut me up, she said, why don't you bring them here? And I took it seriously. I went around to all the capital cities, looked at venues, looked at publicity, and talked to arts administrators. As you would know, this is a very complicated art. I had a little bit of administrative experience and didn't know very much. And then I studied. The first concert I held was a sarod player from Fiji, and people who had brought him out, they didn't know what to do with them. The Monash University was expecting some grant. They didn't get it. And I took over. I said, let me experiment with this. And later on, they told me I did a very good job at organizing the concerts for him. And that's how it started.
And going back to the Punjab, were you always interested in music? Were you always surrounded by music growing up? Was it was important to you from the start?
Well, I wasn't that much interested when I was growing up, but around the time I was at the university, I got interested in music. There was a very well-known festival in Jalandhar, the next city to ours, and it used to have an annual concert, huge festival. There was an old tank, place where they used to collect water for the drought years. So you could seat 20,000 people there. And they had this three-day concert festival. All the big musicians, all the topmost musicians were out. They would have the mediocre ones during the day, and in the middle of the night they would bring Ravi Shankar or Ali Akbar Khan and those, and we used to sat up whole night listening to them right early in the morning. That was wonderful. My father used to train folk dancers, and as he was a university teacher, he would select 12 students. They all had to be 6 foot each, and train them and took them around to other universities. And this group became so famous, the president invited him to dance for him. And that was a very exciting event. And he himself danced a woman's dance, which came from the northwest of the Punjab. And he used to dance that dance himself. He would put on a long women's skirt and have a woman's headdress over his turban, and he danced. It was a slow, rhythmic, very beautiful dance, and people used to go into ecstasies because he was a big, burly man and dancing like this beautiful, rhythmic dance. And that sort of was an influence on me when I came to Delhi. Used to go to these concerts in classical music, and classical music was new, but we were used to it. It was in the atmosphere every year. Delhi, all the cities had their own musical concerts. And
for people who are listening to this and perhaps don't know much, if anything, about Indian classical music, they might be surprised at what you said before about having to sit up all night to hear the really good stuff. Yeah. This is partly, of course, because of the system of ragas being being attached to different times of day. Perhaps you, could you explain about this a little and why the nighttime and dawn ragas are in some ways the most beautiful and often the most mysterious?
It's because of the atmosphere around these ragas. The choice of these ragas depend on the atmosphere around. In the morning, it's the freshness of the day, and at night, it's a bit somber. They bring in more songs which are a bit sad, songs of separation. You see, in India, love has mostly been unfulfilled. And most of our songs are about that. Very few about the joy of meeting and joy of love. Most of them are because marriages are arranged. Men and women don't meet each other. And they have these fantastic romantic ideas about the other sex and the inability to meet. And therefore, the old songs are all very sad, but beautiful. And the other feature of it is that there is a link between the secular love and the devotional love. And most of the time when our classical musicians sing, they carry over in their secular songs are sung in devotional terms and vice versa. Because your attempt to meet the divine is like the frustrated secular love. So you have that carryover between the two forms of singing. And singing is regarded as the supreme art. Instruments merely try to approximate to the singing. And moreover, when the disciples learn music, they learn through singing. And the basics are taught to them in singing. And the attention is a particular mood. And that mood is the mood around which created by nature. That is why during the day, the weather is not like Melbourne weather that you have four or five seasons in the same day. It's a gradual movement. So there is a gradual change of mood also. And the ragas are suited to that. Maybe also seasons. Monsoon songs are different from winter songs or June songs when there is so much heat and you have a different feel about your surroundings.
You're listening to The Music Show on RN, and I'm talking to Mahinda Dhillon, who has been bringing Indian classical music to Australia for 34 years?
It's 34th year, yes.
Given, I mean, what you've been saying about this music, it is so specific to to India, and so different to the kind of classical or pop or jazz music which is better known in a country like Australia. Mm-hmm. How did you go about deciding which musicians should come here, and how did you sell the idea of this music to Australians?
You touched a very difficult part of my business, 33 years. There are a lot of good musicians in India, and I have brought out almost all the topmost ones, except for Ravi Shankar. He would also have come for the last concert for me, but his wife changed her mind. But all the others have come more than once. And I go by my own reaction to their music. If I'm happy, if I'm pleased, I know it will please others. That is the only criterion I have. And of course, I'm also influenced by their standing in the music world. If I go to Amjad Ali, I know he's popular. But that would be only one factor. The more important factor would be how he touches me, his music. And that is the only criterion I use. And I have sometimes, not most of the time, been right in my choice. And the audiences, people in Australia, as you probably know, 80% 85% of my audience are non-Indian. The Indians do come, but since we use very expensive venues and our admission fee is high, most of the Indians are very reluctant to part with money. They want to go. In India, all concerts are free. Some rich man pays, and all the concerts are free. And therefore, if you charge, it's to charge the money, they said, no, no. The other problem is that the two traditions, the Hindustani and Carnatic tradition, they have the same roots, but they are very, very distinctive forms of music. And unfortunately, South Indians won't go to North Indian music, North Indians won't go to the South Indian music. But what I have tried to do is now, in the past few years, bring both of them. And I tell them, so see how beautiful the other form is. So it has been very successful. And I have found that in some situations, South Indian music is prettier than North Indian. Especially like a woman like Sudha Raghunathan, whom you heard last time, or flute player like Dr. Ramani. They touch your heart. And it's so powerful is their music. And there is a certain spiritual energy that they infuse in their music that nothing can beat it. And once you're used to it, it takes you some getting used to it. But once you're used to it, it never leaves you. It's so powerful. In fact, Lord Howard, who was our artistic director for the 1988 festival, he brought seven groups. He's also like you. He's very knowledgeable about Indian music. And he had a mini Indian festival in his main festival. Seven groups he brought, and he came to Melbourne and he said, here are these seven groups. You choose whichever you want to take to other cities. And I took three. And he said, confidentially, don't tell your North Indian brethren, I prefer South Indian music. I said, no, I won't tell them, but I agree with you. Yes.
Mahinda, thank you very much indeed for talking to me.
Can I say a word before we finish? I want to thank you for your program, because the music show is invaluable. Every time my musicians come and you interview them, and you know how to interview them, they feel comfortable, at home with you, and you get their best. And we are very thankful to you, and so are my musicians. Thank you very much.